Don't engage alone. We do this together.
Somebody clip this.
Welcome to Under Two Capes. I'm Jared. I'm here with Nick from the Phoenix Press. What's up?
You know, I am feeling very invincible.
Yeah, exactly. So we're talking about Invincible. Season 2 just wrapped up, actually, the day we're recording this. So I figured, because I've never really had a long-form discussion about the show and the IP with the boys, so I might as well just theme this episode around Invincible. So Nick, would you like to explain to people who live under a rock what Invincible is?
So Invincible is a superhero universe created by Walking Dead scribe Robert Kirkman, and I would classify it as a loving homage to superheroes. It's very clearly reverent to the classic superheroes. I wouldn't really prescribe it any one era because it does pull from like all the different eras of superhero stuff. And most of the heroes themselves are kind of like, I wouldn't call them parodies because they're not like really meant to like clown or make fun of, but homages. Like, I'm going to be using that word a lot. Like, for example, Omni-Man, Invincible's father is Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of other characters that you can kind of trace parallels, but they do have some ones that are more like a mixture of ones. Like, for example, the character of Adam Eve, which is basically kind of a mixture of like Green Lantern, Dr. Manhattan with some Starfire thrown in. Also, she's a redhead, which instantly makes her 1,000 times more awesome.
Well, that's true. And it's nice to see a survivor of the ginger side. So here's the thing, and I'm going to start off this discussion by saying that Invincible is what the boys wants to be. Because here's the problem. Agreed. With the boys. Because here's the thing about the boys. Actually, to compare the two, Invincible and the boys are both doing a parody of superheroes. The thing is, Invincible is more of a loving parody, while the boys is more like, let's make fun of all the stupid stuff.
I mean, it's the ultimate, like, glass half full, glass half empty kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, basically, the boys of Invincible are the same premise, like, homage to superheroes, but one is done by a pessimist, aka the boys, and then one is done by an optimist, aka Invincible. They're the same premise, just done by people who have different outlooks on life.
Yeah, and you can definitely reflect it, because here's the thing. The issue, when you compare the boys to Invincible, the other thing that I think the problem with the boys' IP, with the show and the comics, is that there's too much shock value that it just lost its effect. Where with Invincible, like, they scatter the, like, really shocking moments throughout the series more, so that when it happens, you're like, oh, God.
Yeah, like the thing that turned me off for the boys is going into season 3, they're hyping up the hero G. I'm not going to say the full word unless he gives me permission. Do I have permission to say the full word?
Yeah.
Okay. It's your show. I didn't know if I would let you. But Herogasm. They're hyping up Herogasm. They're like, we ran out of fake body fluids and all this stuff. And then, like, when you got the actual episode, It's like they only really in the house for like half the episode. The story isn't even about it. It's window decoration at best, and it's like
Jensen Ackles was like, I gotta bleach my brain after that. And I'm like, when I watched it, I was like, that's it.
Contrast this with the boys, okay? I mean, sorry. Contrast this with Invincible, okay? Invincible does have shock value. No, mm-hmm. we're not gonna pretend it's like some Christian Minecraft server or whatever. It has brutal scenes. But the thing is, they're so sparse that when they do hit, they hit you like a subway train.
Yeah, yeah, exactly what I was going to bring up. Because with that, that hits hard because guess what? If you didn't have like episodes of like them constantly constantly like cutting people in half constantly. It happens, but not like it doesn't happen as often as it does with the boys, because with the boys, I'm like, whenever anything really brutal happens, I'm like, okay, fine. With Invincible, I'm like, oh my gosh.
Is there any F-bombs in Invincible?
If there are, I can't remember.
Like, I think there's cursing in it, but like, cause like, is Invincible and the boys, like, there's like their potty mouth. Like, they basically have like what a 12-year-old thinks, like, oh, cursing is cool, I can say the F word. But versus Invincible, they sound more like actual humans. And yes, humans do curse, but it's not as frequent.
Yeah, according to IMDb, they do use the F-bomb. It's with like characters like Rex, but still, it's rare, and it's very rare when they do drop an F-bomb.
Yeah, it's so like some characters, they have different speech patterns. Like Rex uses the F-bomb more than other characters. It's almost like these are all human beings, and they all talk differently. Oh my God, is this writing? Sorry.
So this is what good writing is. Wow.
See, the boys. See, this is the problem. Is there's a, what a character says and the character's voice. A character's voice is how they speak. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, like, take me and Jared. Obviously, we agree on a lot of things. We say a lot of different things. We say them differently. How we phrase words are differently. How we speak are differently. I'm a more liberal with the curse words than Jared. That is our individual
and that
voices.
Comes with age.
Fluff off.
I had to.
No, by the way, that's fair. Like, oh, so
yeah, but, yeah, exactly.
But when it comes to the boys, it seems like all the characters have like the same voice. Like, okay, Butcher, he has like that British Scottish thing going on. But beyond that, all the characters they just talk the same. And it's supposed to be individual characters, and yet they don't feel like it. Versus Invincible, everyone feels
unique. Like, for first example, off,
yeah, like Mark sounds different than the agent guy. Like the agent guy has more of a slow
you
kind
mean
of voice.
Cecil,
yeah, like the way Cecil talks versus Mark. Like Cecil, mm-hmm. he has more of a slow, deliberate kind of the way he talks. Versus yeah, Mark is like youthful, energetic, and kind of trips over his own words sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. Now, and the last thing that I will say before we transition to actually talking about the Invincible as the IP and what makes it great is Invincible also paints the superheroes as not all a-holes, unlike the boys, which the boys basically treats like anyone with powers, don't trust them. So I'm like,
let's be honest. If you're going to do a realistic take, yes, some superheroes, maybe even a lot of them, would act like that. But the problem with the boys is they treat it like all superheroes.
Yeah.
And obviously, like, there are good ones, like, you know, Queen Maeve and Starlight. But they portray Starlight and Queen Maeve as, like, the only two people in the
entire world. Is Queen Maeve really that good, though?
She's not evil, though. She's an
anti-hero. She's not evil. I'll give you that. But
she's probably more of an anti-hero. Let's put her more in that camp.
Yeah, so transitioning to what makes Invincible so good. So we're primarily going to be talking about the
transition.
Show. And we're going to also kind of talk about the comics, because I've read at least the comics that are part of season one, and I'm reading through season two right now. And the thing about it, here's the interesting thing about the comics, and I said this when I reviewed the comics like years ago, it's that events happen out of order, out of the order that they do in the show. Like in the show, you don't find out Omni-Man does not kill the Guardians until like halfway through, the first couple of issues.
I do think that change actually does work for the show, though, because it's a really nice kind of like tone setter, because mm-hmm. it kind of becomes like a more of a Hitchcockian bomb under the table kind of situation.
Yeah,
where they treat it like, yeah, he did this thing. When is it? Like, that the drama is, when is everyone going to find out? And I think for the show, I think it works pretty well.
Yeah, exactly. I was about to say that's a change that I'm like totally. Plus the fact the events when the events happen, they are the way they are in the comics. So as if they happen out of order, but the story still makes sense, which it does to Nick's point. I'm like, yeah, I don't care, particularly if it's to improve the story for this medium. And yeah, I agree with it because it's tense as hell seeing Omni-Man like hang out among other superheroes knowing he just basically killed the Justice League.
Yeah, it definitely makes, I think him killing it off is like a nice way to end the first episode, like a good kind of tone. Like it sets the tone for the rest of the series and it kind of creates a bit of a, well, I'll be repeating myself, so I'm good.
Yeah. Now, I will say this. I love Commissioner Gordon playing a bad guy. He is really, really intimidating.
Jared, have you seen the movie Whiplash?
I've seen the clips that you keep sending me, particularly when we were reviewing Avatar The Last Airbender.
It's basically Gordon harassing Reed Richards for 2 hours.
And
Supergirl, and Reed Richards is dating Supergirl.
Okay, don't tell Sue, but but yeah, it's J.K. Simmons is fantastic as the intimidating bad guy.
Dude, you need to watch Whiplash. You need to watch Whiplash.
It's not a movie that really interested me when I saw a part of it. I'm like, yeah, okay.
Not my tempo.
Yeah, exactly. Not my tempo. But I do like Nolan's arc because when you go into season one, again, he's the bad guy. And he basically beats the crap out of Mark. And then as you get to like season two, he kind of mellows out. And in the comics, he does turn good. So that's very, so they are kind of moving him in that direction, which I really liked. I also liked, if you notice, so with season one, I kind of liked how like, again, to your point about each character's being unique, because what you first see, you see how unique even the powers are. But like you have Monster Girl who turns into a giant Hulk, but they put in a little. I like how to like balance her out. They're like every time she morphs, she de-ages.
Yeah, I like the whole bit. Like, oh, I used to be called Monster Woman, but it got to be too awkward, so I just called myself Monster Girl. Make it easier.
Yeah, I really dig that. Now, the other thing that people are going to ask about is about Amber. So, I'm going to tell you this. I've read a little, I'm still in the middle of my reading of the Invincible comics, but according to what I've seen online, they made her more of a B in the show as opposed to the comics.
Yeah, apparently in the comics, she was more of like a white blonde girl kind of thing.
That too, but I'm saying beyond that, I'm saying characterization wise, it's like she's a little more mean in the show.
Yeah, and it's like, here's the problem. When you have a character that's meant to be the love interest of your main character, making her insufferable is not a good idea. Because you want the audience to fall in love with this character the same way the main character does. That's why people love Mary Jane, because because Natalie Peter has fallen in love with Mary Jane, so has the audience.
Suck it, Marvel. But by the way, Nick,
don't you invoke it? Don't you invoke it?
No, you could say it's by design Amber's not Mark's real love interest.
Oh, thank God! I thought you were going to invoke what we did last night.
No. But for those of you that don't know, Nick read One More Day and it went crazy. But anyway, you could say we just needed one more day. But anyway, I had to. But the thing about that is that you could say, because you know, everyone loves Adam Eve, and spoiler alert, she's really the love interest.
Yeah, she's great.
And
if I ever get to cosplay with a girlfriend, I would love to do Invincible Adam Eve. Like, I would actually like to do that. Like, if I ever get like a redheaded girlfriend, that is definitely on the list.
And I'll be Omni-Man. I'll be doing the Think Mark meme.
And we show up to your party and you're like, oh, I thought you were going to do Nightwing Batgirl. I just give you a look.
Yeah, exactly. I thought you were going to be catching some Wheel of Time anyway.
Actually, that's not a bad idea.
Oh, yeah. and I mean the show, not the books. But anyway,
no, and I mean the books, not the show.
Yeah, okay. But so let me ask you this, Nick. So when you discuss an animated series, you do talk a lot about the animation style and if it looks cheap or not. Now, would you say from seasons 1 to 2, there is an improvement in the animation?
I mean, even season 1, the animation was good. It's even more especially contrast now that X-Men 97 is doing its run. When you would think Disney would have more money to throw at literally the thing that made them famous, animation versus
but it's Amazon too. But
Amazon has more money than God, so yeah, it makes sense. But like the animation's solid. It's not like earth-shatteringly good. Like it's not earth-shattering. It's not going to win any awards.
No Spider-Verse.
It does its job. Like it does its job well. It's not bad. It's good. It's solid. It's serviceable. Like, it's not mind-blowing. It does its job. I got nothing bad to say about it, but I don't really have anything good to say about it either. Like, it does its job.
I loved where in season 2, there was this episode where Mark is getting into the autographed of basically Ryan Ottley. And Ottley's giving him, like, the tricks they do to animation in a budget. Where he's like, oftentimes we'll do voiceover over establishing shot of a crowd to make it look like those crowd people are moving, but they're really not.
Okay, Jared, you know what we have to do. Next time we have Sam Liu on the stream, we need to get him to do a live reaction to that clip.
He already did on Twitter, but yeah, he said this is all so true. Yeah, because it's true, though, because they have to rely on all these tricks to make it look somewhat decent. And
I love how our show has gotten so popular. We have industry contacts now.
Yeah, I know. I love that. That's awesome. So, the cool part, so the other thing that I do like about Invincible is how bloody it gets, because here's why. Because obviously Invincible is, yes, it's a homage to superheroes in general, but it seems to me like it's particularly targeting DC, and targeting is like a bad word, but you understand what I'm saying. But when you do like blood to this gore to this level, it differentiates it from the source, from like the thing it's homaging in such a way that everyone's like, okay, it's not just a DC ripoff.
Well, the thing that I really appreciate is, yeah, it goes bloody and it goes gory, but the tone of the overall show is hopeful. It's positive. Like they, like Mark wants to do good. This is not a pessimistic show. This is not, oh, the world sucks. Like this Invincible, what I like about Invincible is, okay, this world has its problems. There's bad stuff, but there's good stuff as well. Like, people are actually good people here. Like, it would have been so easy to make the mother, like, an alcoholic, pessimistic, you know, whatever.
If this were the boys, that's the direction they would go, my friend.
Like, I love the mother in here. Like,
yeah,
her first thought is Mark, and she doesn't want to take care of Mark's kid. She does it for her son, who is, like, that is his family. It's not her family. It's his family. And it's like she sees this kid abandoned. Like, she'd rather be like, okay, I would, like, she'd probably slap the crap out of Mark for doing that. But that kid is innocent. Like, this is what I love. These people are people, and they act like good people. These are assholes. Like, the thing that I love about Invincible is, I think this kind of speaks to Robert Kirkman as well, is he gets it. Like,
yeah.
He, like, this show obviously has a love for the source material, but I think the thing that Robert Kirkman gets about superheroes that almost hardly nobody in the modern space seems to get, superheroes are aspirational, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They're not meant to be like, oh, I want to know about Wonder Woman on her period. No, we want to see Wonder Woman kick butt and say babies.
So you could say Robert Kirkman is like Zack Snyder in that way. I had to. You know I have to reference Zack Snyder once an episode.
Imagine they do an Invincible movie and Zack Snyder directs it.
Oh, that would be dope!
Live action Invincible, directed by Zack Snyder, written by Robert Kirkman.
That would be killer, because Zack
can you imagine the heads exploding, like,
in slow motion?
Also, if they do live action, J.K. Simmons has to play Omni-Man.
Yes, exactly. I would love that.
Okay, actually, let's kind of do that for a second. Invincible live action. Let's cast it for a second. Who would you want to play Mark?
guy that voices him in the show.
Who is it?
It is, let me pull it up real quick. For some reason, I'm drawing a blank on that, but let me do that. Steven Yeun. He played Glenn from The Walking Dead.
A lot of Walking Dead alums.
Yeah.
Isn't he too old, though?
No, I'm sure he could. By the way, I the other thing I noticed in the show is a lot of Gray DeLuise roles in this. So I'm like, there's my Catwoman.
I'm sure Jennifer Hale's in here somewhere.
Is she? I don't know. I'm looking at the cast. I wouldn't be surprised. And if so, her episodes automatically get a perfect score. Nope, not yet. Please put her in somewhere.
Is Laura Bailey in the show?
I don't think so.
So, okay. So for the record, for people who don't know the deep lore of Comics League, Laura Bailey is to me what Jennifer Hale is to Jared.
Yes, exactly.
Now, so anything that has Laura Bailey in it, instantly gets a 10 out of 10 for me.
Now we obviously know in terms of like who would play the original Guardians of the Globe, be Henry Cavill, Gal Gadot, Ben Affleck.
Oh my God, Fisher. Here he goes.
There you go. Yes. And then the Squadron Supreme show up. I'm only kidding. No, I have to do that just because it annoys them. But anyway.
So, I hate you so much right now.
Yeah, I know. But back to the show. Now, let me ask you this, Nick. And This was a criticism I have with season two, is that they took too long in that mid-season break.
Yeah, though I agree with you. I think it really did kill the pace of the show. Fortunately, the second half is still good.
It's still great.
It would have been so much better if they would have just kept this up. I do wonder how much of that is production. If there was production issues. Or like, because I really want to give this show the benefit of the doubt and say this wasn't their intention.
Well, let me put it this way. At the very least, like Nick just said, at least it's good the second half. It'd be one thing if they delayed it, if like it had this extended delay, and then it just came out and it was crap. But no, it's good.
Because the thing is, going forward, we can view it as a single season when we rewatch it. So yeah, there's at least that benefit.
Yeah, so it's not like okay, I'm gonna do the role play watch through. It's where we watch it and then we wait a couple of months and then we watch it again.
Who would do that? Like,
who would do that? I know, right? Now, the other thing that introduced in season two, that when I told Nick this, because remember, Nick does not know the comics lore of these characters.
No, I know.
I had to explain to when I explained to him who Anissa was. He was like, what? Yeah. So for those that don't know, spoiler alert, because Anissa showed up in season two. Later on, she SA's Mark.
Oh, even hearing it a second time is like, ugh.
Yeah, but so the way the story goes, do you mind if I spoil the comic story for this?
Yeah, go ahead.
So the way the story goes is that she, because what happened is that there's going to be a war, spoiler alert again, I'll put a thing on the screen that says spoiler alert. But
actually, you can just put like a tag or something. Just put like a spoiler alert tag.
I'll put a text on the screen like I normally do. So there's going to be a war against the Viltrumites. So, and it's going to end with essentially there's going to be like a peace treaty where the Viltrumite like race is like almost wiped out. So the peace treaty says we won't mess with you. You allow us to live amongst humanity. So at one point, Anissa tries dating. It doesn't go well because mankind are kind of a-holes. And then she goes to Mark, doesn't take no for an answer. That happens. Then, so what happens is then eventually she will get pregnant and have a kid and actually fall in love and have like a redemption arc. And it's not like she stays evil the whole show. It's just the one thing she's known for is that. And I'm like,
why would you essay your main character? Like, come on. Yeah. It's bad enough when it happens to women. It's also bad when it happened to men. Come on.
Yeah, I'm just like, okay, that's a bit odd. And I'm like, but so, now what I'm wondering, are they going to go in that direction?
My God, I think? Hope not.
Yeah, because I think
if
this
I
is one of
the guess. Yeah. I would say no. I think they might like half butt it where like he tries to come on to him, tries to force him, and then he like pushes off or whatever.
Or they may do like a fade out thing, but I'm just like, or I think, yeah.
He might do it to someone else because here's the thing. It's there's kind of been like this pushback for SA being used in shows as a plot device against mm-hmm. women for like the longest time. And it's going to be really telling if this does actually happen and then you have people defend it. Like I'm going to go fire and brimstone on anyone who says, "Oh, it's okay if it happens to a guy in television, but not a woman." I will go fire and brimstone. I will go full
and trust Omni-Man me,
man.
Here's the thing you got to understand about Nick: don't make Nick angry. You won't like him when he's angry.
You don't want to see me when I go purple and yellow.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I'm wondering. Because if I were Kirkman personally, I'd be like, this is the one time where I'm going to take out an event from the book and not do that. Because, yeah, that's not... Because here's the thing about that. That will not translate well nowadays in the animated series.
Yeah, like sure, you might be able to get away with it in something like The Boys, where... Oh, they would love that.
The Boys would totally do it. And The Boys would show it.
Yeah, but this kind of thing, especially with the show kind of being a little pulled back in terms of, like, yeah, they're violent, but they're not, like, vulgar. If you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's more tasteful with how, like the violence is depicted to serve the story. Like, when they ramp up the violence and the shock value, it's more to be like, oh, my God, this is brutal. It's more just, like, get you with the emotion of the story. You know, like, when Mark is getting a crap beat on him by Omni-Man and it's like brutal, it's supposed to be because you're supposed to feel, they want you to feel how Mark feels. And so in that instance, the brutality is understandable.
Exactly. Now, speaking of Anissa, I will say the good part, the really well done part is when Mark is having dinner with his girlfriend, and then Anissa just shows up and goes, "Mark Grayson," and then she basically puts her hand on Amber's neck and basically threatens her and says, "Okay, come up to talk to me, or I'll kill everyone in here." And I'm like, "Okay, that is intimidating as hell." So I'm like, "Well done on that." The again, atmospheric storytelling, everything here is really good.
And the thing is, mm-hmm. that is kind of the reason, like, that's kind of the catalyst for Amber breaking up. Because I think that's when she really, really realizes the stakes, like how real things can get. And honestly, if you listen to her dialogue, she's kind of saying, "You deserve to be with someone who can match your speed." Like, that's why Adam Eve and Mark work so well together. They're kind of on each other's level. Like, Mark doesn't need to protect Adam Eve. She's perfectly capable of doing that.
Amazing. Adam Eve needs to protect Mark.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, geez. Yeah.
But that's why, from the superhero perspective, they actually work because they can watch each other's backs. You know, it's like, you know, like, but also, like, Adam Eve is in the life too. It's like, it's just more of an equal partnership, you know?
So you could say that Adam Eve is like the Wonder Woman of this universe and Mark is like Superman. Which, by the way, can I say this? What does it say that this is a better Superboy story than John Kent? That's for you, Tevye.
Also, I just realized that if I do show up with this, with that couple's cosplay, it's like, Nick, you did Super Wonder!
Yeah, there you go, dude! You finally saw the light!
Oh, my God. Yeah.
No, but it's a good point because this is basically a Superboy story. Only if Superman was actually at first evil but went good. But
hey, Jared, did you see that? Like the comments go, "Holy crap, Tevye found a way into a recording."
Yeah, I know, right? We're not even live.
Somehow Tevye found a way.
Life finds a way. But yeah, it's interesting about that because Mark is basically, well, currently it's like, because Omni-Man is like the most well-known superhero on Earth in the beginning of season one up until the end of season two. Mm-hmm. And Mark is basically the one that's meant to take over for him and stuff, particularly in season two as well. So it's kind of cool seeing him become like the premier superhero. What do you think?
Yeah, I wouldn't say he's as famous as Omni-Man, but he's kind of like...
He's getting there. In other words, he goes on that journey, I think. Now,
the only thing I think is, like, in season one, I wish the team arc had gone on a little bit longer instead of just half an episode. Because I would have liked to spend more time with him, kind of more of a junior superhero than before he gets thrust into the big leagues.
True. I'm trying to remember if they go along with the teen team in the comics as well. I don't think so. So it's not.
Plus,
like
the other thing is, much the entire team just went on to be the Guardians of the Globe.
Yeah, like, exactly. You know why? Like, because Robot was the one who picked the Guardians.
Yeah, I also like. I actually do like Robot Man's story. It's actually kind of good. And
oh, it gets crazy. Oh, geez, because I watched a video on the comics that follow Robot's story. Oh, you ain't seen nothing yet, sir.
Yeah, and then I do like kind of like they show the reality of the powers, like the duplicating girl, like I've died so many times, like that's why she's with the immortal, because like the immortal has died, and also Rex. I've heard some people like they say they want a Rex special. Actually, yeah, I kind of like
that would be kind of cool.
I feel like there's some trauma there that we need to explore, like understand why.
Speaking
like
of specials. How about that awesome Adam Eve special?
I was not intending to have that good of a segue, but hey.
I could not have asked for a better segue, dude. But yeah, I'm watching this. And actually, when it came out, I was on Nick's show, as a matter of fact. And he said, this is good. This is doing female superheroes right. Do you want to expound on that, Nick?
Yeah, so the Adam Eve special... They go into it. They kind of, he's got a really, really tragic backstory.
Yeah.
The other like small criticism I have for Invincible is they sometimes tend to trivialize, like commoditize, like the backstories or whatnot. Mm-hmm. You know, because of due to the fact that it's an homage. Like, oh, you got bit by a radioactive spider? Oh, who cares? You know, or mm-hmm. whatever. And this in the Adam Eve special, they play it like it's tragedy, but at the same time, I don't know. There's kind of like an undercurrent of like commoditization to it, but I really, really like is it explains the relationship she has with her parents, because they're her adopted parents. They adopted her, and like, yeah, her dad is really hard on her, but you realize it comes from a place of love.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what's kind of interesting, when you watch the show on the Adam Eve special, isn't it kind of interesting how the father was like so against her becoming a superhero? Was he wrong?
No,
not really.
It put a target on her back. Like, yeah, he was able to deal with like the people and get off her back permanently. And like, yeah, he's not perfect. Like, he does have some resentment. And he's very proud. You know, he doesn't accept charity. But these are all human flaws. These do not make him a monster.
And here's the thing.
He can be an a-hole. He can be a jerk. Yes. But he's not a monster. Like, do you ever see him abuse her? Like, yeah,
no.
He says some mean things to her. But, like, he's not a monster.
Here's the other thing, though. Speaking of, like, her father and, like, we kind of touched on this. But I like how, because oftentimes, at least I find, some superhero properties tend to, like, trivialize the background non-superpowered characters and give all the attention to the superheroes, but no, mm-hmm. they give a fair amount of attention to like Mark's mom, everyone else is like side characters, and it makes the world feel more full instead of just being okay, it's all about the superheroes.
Like, also, can we give a little bit of a shout out to like Mark's friend and like their subplot where it's like, yeah, he's a gay dude, but I feel like he's
William.
He's like,
yeah, I love that guy.
Like, they literally have a gay romance subplot, and it works. It somehow works in the show. Like, it's not pandering. I think it's because William being gay is just, like, part of, like, it's not his entire defining characteristic. There's so much more about him. Being gay is just, like, part of, like, another item.
I think
on the
list. In the comics, he dated Adam Eve and then came out as gay, as a matter of fact. So that's interesting. But yeah, to that point, yeah, as opposed to what they do with Iceman, this character is gay, but you really
Bobby,
don't.
You're gay. Bobby, you're gay.
I know, right. But thanks, Bendis. But with William, it's nowhere near like the amount of like tropey and bashing you over the head type of thing that we see a lot in media. It's and you know what? It's refreshing, and that's why I like watching the show so much, because it seems, again, like and this is how you know, and to Nick's point earlier about Robert Kirkman, this is how you know it's being developed by a fan that has a deep love for superheroes instead of just someone that's using this as a stepping stone in their career. No, Kirkman loves this stuff.
I mean, to be fair, Kirkman is already like, I think it helps that like he already did The Walking Dead, mm-hmm. which is like, you know, like it's one of the, like Walking Dead is one of those once in a generation type shows that like literally defined an era of television. So Robert Kirkman's already got his bag. Robert Kirkman has already made his mark. He's already a living legend.
Yeah, exactly. But like this way, he could rest on his laurels and just like coast through this. But no, he sticks through it. And you can tell Kirkman is, again, one of those creatives that you could feel the love in even the comics. You could feel the love that this guy has for superheroes throughout the entire IP. Well, him and Ryan Ottley.
My point is Kirkman doesn't have anything left to prove. Yeah. Everyone knows he's good. So he has the clout to do this kind of thing. And also to be fair, Invincible was shepherded under one of the best Image editor-in-chiefs by the way, I'm making that a shtick for this show. Whenever we bring up
Whenever we talk about Valentino versus Larson, you gotta do that, dude.
We gotta give credit to Valentino. One of the best editors.
Didn't he bring in both in The Walking Dead and Invincible?
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure he did a good job at this is my problem and tangent. When Larson was trying to downplay what Valentino did as publisher of Image, and I'm like, Invincible and Walking Dead would like to speak to you.
Okay, we need to get Valentino on the show.
That would be dope. I'd love to get them. Oh, really, any of the Image founders, particularly Jim Lee. I would love pick your brain about DC. But anyway,
well, I know what comic you're gonna show him.
Yeah, the Justice League 12. There you go.
Also, I know you're gonna ask Jim Lee about Super Wonder. We know.
Yeah, I'm gonna ask you what the hell happened with the New 52, because you screwed the pooch.
One day that will definitely happen.
So, in terms of where I want to go with this discussion to wrap up, the thing about let me ask you this, Nick. How do you rate?
Looks like Jared's.
What?
You're having some connection problems there for a second.
Oh, okay. Am I back now?
Unfortunately.
Screw you. But anyway, now let me ask you this. What season is, how do you rank these seasons? And how do you rate them out of 10?
Season one, I give like a 9.6 out of 10. Really, really good. Season two, I give a 9. Still really good. It's the break itself was a bit of a thing, and not a fan of the multiverse stuff, honestly.
Yeah, I was like, they went a little, well, here, at least with Invincible, they didn't go full ham on the multiverse. It wasn't like the entire season is multiverse. Not yet. But
I'm sorry. I'm so like, I'm so over multiverse plots. That anytime it's even mentioned, I get turned off. Like, it could be the best multiverse story ever, but because it's like everything has to be multiverse now, just the mere mention of it, if it's like, lose a point.
Because here's why the multiverse is being used now as the company's excuse for publishing bad content, because they can just say, nope, it's not canon, it's over there.
This is a bit of a tangent, but like, I was actually like tentatively excited for Fantastic Four. But then they announced a new Silver Surfer. But like, oh, it's Multiverse. This character was literally in 4 issues of the comic and then died. But because you're like, oh, it's Multiverse, like, fluff off! Sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
I had to pause.
save that the for CLD and it's coming out on Friday. So tonight, so save it for CLD tonight. So in terms of, for me, yeah, I think season one was definitely better story wise than season two. The other thing about season one that I liked, and season two also had this, none of the episodes really felt like filler. I know some were, but they didn't feel like that. In other words, the season didn't feel that long, which I definitely appreciated, particularly after like going through so many episodes of Avatar The Last Airbender. I was like, oh my gosh, just move on to the freaking plot. That's the thing on Nick. So all in all, terrific show and universe. And I very much am excited for season three. And Nick, I'm very much excited for you to see the season finale of Invincible. So we'll talk about that in CLD. So we're going to wrap it up now. So Nick, where can we find you and what have you got coming out on your channel?
Well, as of this recording, you can find me on the Friday Night Frenzy. I will be giving my thoughts on Invincible, X-Men 97. I'll be premiering the cover to Turn Samurai number 4. That's going to be pretty darn awesome. And then we're going to be talking about the old show, The Twilight Zone. And so Jared will be busting out his old man jokes there. And then, on Saturday, got Spider-Man. Going to be streaming some more Spider-Man. That stuff's been doing pretty good, if I must say. So, yeah, it's all good.
It's going to be one more day going through Spider-Man.
Screw you.
So for for Comics League, by the time this goes out, I would have already done this collab. But be sure to head over to the Sci-Fi Center on YouTube, where I'm gonna be hanging out with William Talati, and I are gonna be doing that. CLD we're gonna be talking about a wide variety of topics, probably Invincible as well. And in terms of movie night, we're gonna be talking about Batman and Robin. Oh boy, and at least it's not Blank Man. And by the way, you're going to want to tune in to CLD because anyone that watched the April Fool's stream knows that Nick didn't do his homework, so I give him an extension. So he's going to be positively reviewing and then bashing the Marvels. Remember, I'm making this one rule. I said this on the April Fool's stream, and you wouldn't hear for this, so I'll just reiterate it. We're keeping the no swearing rule because that was a pain in the ass to edit last time. So you're going to be way more creative with your word choices, Nick. And in terms of CLD, I mean, in terms of Super Wonder a Legacy, Britt and I are going to be talking about how we would fix DC Rebirth. And before you ask it, us, not doing it is not an option. So anyway, stay heroic, everyone. We'll see you in the next episode. Remember, Lois Lane is Lois Lame. Zoe's for life. See you later.